Good day, South Dakota. Welcome to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest in tech news. We'll also talk about the hacking of U.S. government websites, Windows 10, have some gains and some losses, and we'll offer tips on keeping you safe when using free Wi-Fi out and about this summer. You can send your emails to midday@sdpb.org if you have questions, or tweet us at SDPB. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio or call now 800-524-3604. Again, email your suggestions or questions to our guests today, Joel Brovelite, John T. Meyer, Amos Aesop, and Jeff Litterick. The email address again is midday@sdpb.org. We'll hear from the panelists and you after this news from SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to help you in a variety of areas that you might have questions about today. The experts are here in the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls. We have Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite. Hello, Joel.
Hello, how are you?
I am great, sir.
I'll get my mic down there.
Yeah, all get her right, so we can hear you properly on there. We have the Director of Technical Support at DataSync, Amos Aesop.
Hey.
Amos.
Howdy.
Good day, sir. Lemon Lee's John T. Meyer is in Omaha today. We let him go down there from time to time and do his little conferences.
He's very social.
He is extremely social and socializing in Omaha this week, and we wish John safe travels home. And from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Peer, we'll have Jeff Litterick on the line in just a little bit, and we're going to probably want to talk a lot about security and things with Jeff with that big government hack that just was announced. I guess it's not a new hack. They've been in there for a few months.
Been in there for a few months. It just takes a while sometimes for us to be able to discover where they've been. And sometimes, you know, in the interest of doing a little housekeeping, in the interest of maybe not showing their hand, they might not release that information at the time that they're actually aware that something's going on, because they want to give, in this case, they're claiming there's a possibility that it's the Chinese doing it. The opportunity to kind of, you know, leave their footprint or their thumbprint, as it might be, so that we can get a better idea on who it is that is causing these issues and breaking into the system that we don't want them to be doing.
Sure. Well, like I said, we'll probably discuss that a little bit deeper in a little dive with Jeff later. We have a question already on the show today. We want to thank Rita for that. Again, you can contact the show in a variety of ways. You can send us a tweet at SDPB, email us. Midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, is the most popular way of getting a hold of us. Post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, or, of course, call our toll-free number, 800-524-3604. If you're not that shy, you can go ahead and do that. Rita says, I have a Motorola smartphone on the Android operating system. I was prompted to allow an upgrade to the operating system, which she did earlier this week. Since that, her phone won't stay charged for longer than 12 hours, kind of burning through the old batteries. Prior to the download, I could keep it charged for 3 to 4 days. That's amazing. Any thoughts?
So there's no definitive answer on this one, because she's there's no, you know, we don't know the exact model of the Motorola phone. Motorola makes a number of smartphones, but in general, it's been a problem with the Lollipop updates. That battery life changes when you do an operating system install. It will change the who is. Or what is being controlled, like the radios, how frequently the radios check for where it's at, how frequently, how much power those radios are putting out in order to contact the cell towers, and really how much the operating system is doing number crunching in the background just to do the things that operating systems do, whether it's, you know, create an alert for you because you have an alarm set, or you've got a calendar item at a specific time, or checking your Facebook. There's a lot of things that happen in the background that can or be optimized, or in some cases be unoptimized for battery usage. So you know, it's probably directly related to that update. And if you know the specific model, there's things you can do to fix that if you go out and look for Motorola, you know, whatever it happens to be, and the Lollipop update. So You know, the other option would be to roll that back and uninstall that update. But
is that pretty easy?
Is it pretty easy? How well do you know the ins and outs of your Motorola smartphone?
Right, yeah,
the definition of easy. Is it easy? It's for someone who's done that, it is easy. For someone who hasn't, it's probably not advisable. In fact, if you're not comfortable doing it, even in the slightest, I would suggest taking it into your retailer and asking them for help in that case.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily have to go back to the provider,
right.
If you want. There are lots of places. Hidden here at Sioux Falls, I've used the cell phone guy.
Mm-hmm.
They can, there's lots of, small shops, local places that will do phone repairs and upgrades and all sorts of stuff that maybe you can buy a little cheaper or get some advice.
Mm-hmm. Though, I will put out that if you are having this problem, you should contact your provider and let them know. Because of the way updates through carriers and different stuff works. They may be aware of the issue, they may not be, but if enough people complain, they usually push or hurry up the updates that fix these types of issues, because normally there's more software updates that may come out or already in the pipeline to fix this. By putting pressure on the provider, it hurries them to push those updates out to fix this stuff. I've had this in the past and had to live with it for about 3 weeks before an update came out to fix it. So complaining does help somewhat.
Great. Hey, since our last show, speaking of cell phones, I'll just mention this because it was topical. I saw a webinar. It wasn't even a webinar. It was a live webcast of an announcement from a company. I think Jeff's and Amos are real familiar with Asus.
Sure.
They make great motherboards. And
that's this
and
laptop.
You got a great laptop there. They have a phone now. Asus is making a phone. It's not it's carrier unlocked, so it's agnostic.
Sure.
It's got dual SIM cards, like a 3200 milliamp battery. What else does this thing do? It was a camera company that had the webcast, so it talked a lot about the features. You draw a C on the screen and it automatically starts the camera and you're ready to take pictures. But the unique thing as a photographer that I found was it's a 13 megapixel camera, but but you take a picture and you have an option, it'll actually break the screen into four quadrants and sew those pictures together. So it'll take four 13-megapixel cameras and sew it together into a 52-megapixel photo. It's like 17 meg when it's done with it. And it saves it onto the phone. So it's huge.
Hmm.
It does a pixel combining, some sort of an algorithm to make it, it takes four pixels and binds them together in low light to bring the low light sensitivity up without really losing a whole lot of quality. It's amazing, but the price is quad core, 4 gig of RAM on a phone. And the price points are fairly reasonable. I think it opens for $199.
Is this the Zen phone?
It is the Zen phone.
Zen phone.
So no buttons around the side. It's all completely smooth, and the only button is kind of in the back, in the middle, where you'd normally your index finger would kind of fall right by where the camera is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a up down volume button there, but
so
it looks good. It must perform amazingly well. They had some gamers on there talking about doing some 3D gaming and some things, but as far as quad core and 4 gig on the phone, I thought that was amazing. And you can just go out and buy it and use it on whatever carrier.
Cost on that?
I think $199 is the base model.
Really?
It doesn't get you the 4 gig.
Okay.
It gets you 2 gig of RAM, but the $299 gets you the whole enchilada.
Which, for a phone, an unlocked carrier-agnostic phone, that's cheap. That's a good deal, especially for something with those sorts of specs.
Yeah, the specs were what drove me, but the price point, too. I had recently had a family member who, destroyed his phone, and we're looking for another phone until the contract is up. And this is not a bad option.
Mm-hmm.
to go to something like this, and you're certainly not gonna see any performance hits or anything. you know, and battery life's going to be amazing on it with 3,200 milliamp battery in there. So anyway, I want, as long as I had an email or a question about phones, I wanted to throw that in there. If you're in the market for a new phone and you happen to think that the camera is going to be important and you want to try some neat new things.
As far as I can tell, just a clarification on the combining photos. It doesn't actually combine four 13 megapixel images because it can't shoot four at the same time because it's only got one camera. So it it apparently in software shoots four divided up 13 megapixel. So it's really, you know, whatever that math is, I suppose, around four megapixel pictures, and stitches those together, but gives you the but each one is taken using different lighting taking in different light, so it gets you a better picture in the end, which is something the iPhone has done since the 6 came out.
So is that like an HDR type picture?
Yeah, it's just like HDR. It's okay. Really smart software. I don't mean to downplay. It's all cameras should do that, and most now do in one way or another. It's just it's kind of the evolution from just one great lens to what can we do with software that's going to improve this picture, and it's a way they can kind of eke more out of hardware. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's good that it's got that capability, because really, why wouldn't it?
I stand a little bit corrected there. We are just about to the first break in the show. We've got a lot more to talk about. We've got some Windows 10 things coming up that's coming out next month. We want to talk a little bit about security on Wi-Fi. And, of course, any other topics, we have another question in via email as well about Outlook, and we will get to that right after this break. And welcome back to the Computer Guys, your tech radio today. Gathered the experts, and they're here. Mac guru Joel Brovelite is here. He's got some Mac news in a bit. Director of Technical Support at DataSync, Amos Asaf, is here. And from the Bureau, Jeff Litterick in Peer. I want to remind you, you can call, tweet, or text, or email your questions. Or simply swing by the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. The link for today, for your video on Friday, is more entertainment-based than tech-based today. So go on there and catch an old oldie but a goodie on the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Go ahead, post your comments there, your questions. Don't be shy. Our phone number is 800-524-3604. At SDPB is our Twitter handle, and the email address is midday@sdpb.org. The next show date is June 19th, and we're going to have a special guest that day. Joshua Warren will be here. He is he's the leader of a group in Sioux Falls here and really in eastern South Dakota. SQL Saturday is coming up next month, and he leads a group, 605 SQL group. I usually call it SQL. I feel weird calling it SQL, but I realize that's the proper pronunciation of that. And what that is a database. It's used for storing data and calling data back. And it's incredibly well used throughout the internet for driving websites or pieces of websites that make things happen. And if you know what that is, you know what I'm talking about. And he's going to join us on the show on June 19th and talk a little bit about SQL Saturday. If your interest is piqued and you want to get more information on that, their next meeting is coming up Tuesday, June 9th here in Sioux Falls at 6 p.m. Downtown Library. If you just type in 605 SQL Group, you're going to probably be able to find that information on the web as well. We can link it up on our Facebook page as well. But building strong relationships between us, data computer people, and them, managers and end users, is the topic on June 9th. So that ought to be a good one. Joshua Warren, is going to facilitate that discussion and then give a little preview of the conference coming up later. But let's move on with the show. We have another question that came in. Doug writes, help, is there a way to synchronize my desktop without buying an Exchange server with his Outlook and Outlook.com? Is there a simple, low-cost app to accomplish this? And Amos, I'm not exactly sure what Doug's asking here. He's using Outlook on his desktop and retrieving mail, but he wants that also to be at Outlook.com?
So Outlook.com is a web-based email program that is Hotmail. It's the next version of Hotmail. We've got a couple of different ways to do it. Jeff found that there is some manual instructions out on a website called Slipstick, which is a great website for really anything that has to do with email, especially Outlook-type items. And so if you take a look there, there's some information on it. It also points out that Outlook.com is going to be converted or migrated, I guess is the correct word, to Office 365, which is Microsoft's software as a service model, which is you pay by the month. Instead of buying the software and you get perpetual licenses for it, now you're going to spend $12 a month per person in order to have access to Word and Outlook and Excel. So that being said, eventually it's going to be migrated later this year, and that'll probably fix that issue or change that issue. The other option is that Microsoft, in their support articles, provides actually what they call a Outlook Hotmail connector, and the versions matter on this. So whether you're 2010, 2007, 2003, that makes a difference as well. So look at Slipstick, take a look on the support items for Microsoft, and really just Google Outlook and Outlook.com, and you should be able to find both of those, and that should get you all synced up. The other option, too, would be to just do it manually and to go in and use either POP or IMAP into your Outlook.com account. Not nearly as elegant, not quite as feature-rich, but certainly possible.
Just a follow-up from Doug, he says, I want my calendar to sync. I guess maybe that's the the big part.
Yeah, I'd do the connector.
The nice part, once it's migrated, and you can actually sign up to kind of be an early beta tester, is once they migrate it, they'll be running Exchange on the back end, so you'll just be connecting to their Exchange server, so to speak. So there are problems syncing contacts and calendars in 2013, especially Outlook. There's some gotchas and some bugs. But once the migration is done, you just connect to it as an Exchange server, and you won't have any of these sync problems in the future. So,
Okay. Well, thanks for that explanation, Amos and Jeff. While we're on the subject of Windows, Jeff, have you been following the Windows 10 announcement? You can, pre-order the free update for Windows 10.
Well, if you have a Windows 7 machine or Windows 8 of any flavor machine right now, as long as it's already patched up, you should actually see a new icon in the lower right-hand corner, a little Windows icon, same as your start key on your keyboard. And if you click on that, that actually starts the whole process to get you registered and prepared for the free upgrade. It actually tests your system, make sure all your drivers on your system are good, and it puts you kind of in a queue because Windows 10 goes live end of next month. And it will be free to upgrade for 1 year. After that 1 year, you will have to pay, and it's looking like the price is going to be like $200. So if you do want to go to Windows 10, I do recommend, you may not want to go right away, but you do need to do it in that first year. And that icon, when it appears, remember, your system already has to be patched up. So if you're missing patches, make sure you patch your system up and that you have Windows Update turned on. That icon will appear and stay there, and then you can click on it at any time to start the upgrade process. The only thing you're really going to need is about 3 gigs worth of space. And one of the better things we've heard now is, unlike previous times where you upgraded, once you do that initial upgrade, and this is more for the techie people out there, you'll be able to do a clean install of Windows 10 for free, which means you can burn the whole PC down and reinstall Windows 10 cleanly without doing an upgrade to fix certain issues and stuff, once you have done that very first upgrade for free. Before, you'd always have to install the old operating system and then re-upgrade it on previous versions of Windows. Now, once you get the free upgrade, you can always install it on the hardware for free. As a
most important thing for me, I think, is the start button's back. That's just one thing I haven't been able to get used to in Windows 8.1, using it for about a month now. Got my new gaming system. Just haven't gotten with the tiles yet. So I'll be interested in that.
One thing I will mention, that we should mention, is Windows 10 is removing some features. And an important one for, like, you, Kent, just to be aware of before you upgrade, is DVD playback is not free anymore and enabled out of the box. Once you upgrade to Windows 10, you'll have to install third-party software to be able to play DVDs, movies, on your computer. And also, any of your desktop widgets or icons that you may have used in Windows 7 and stuff, or Vista, so, will be automatically deleted and removed off the system, too. Those are the big gotchas. The whole media center is going away and stuff. So if you do use those options, be aware that once you upgrade, they're gone. So,
well, media center is probably the biggest impact to most people if they're if they've cut the cord and they're doing things with their TV, with their computer. That is it, XMBC or whatever it was called, the Xbox Media Center.
Yeah,
that's a staple of a lot of people's I guess video libraries.
Yeah.
But isn't Coda,
you better get all the functionality back with between third party and other apps. It just won't be built into the OS anymore.
Yeah, like you can use VLC to play DVDs and what was the other thing you mentioned?
That sort of stuff. They don't even come with DVD.
If you still have a floppy drive, there will be no driver. Your floppy drive will stop working entirely, and maybe it's time to say goodbye to the floppy drive. But if you still want a floppy drive, you'd actually have to get a third-party driver in order for your old floppies to work on your computer.
Although that couldn't possibly be a problem, because if you're buying an external floppy drive, it's going to come with a driver.
Well,
it would be
not only that,
odd for that but to not be the case.
If you've got a machine that still has a floppy drive in it, the hardware specs probably aren't up to snuff for Outlook. What? For Windows 10.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe if you bought a super beefy one back in 1996.
And similar thing to the DVD. While I think that's weird that they would take out that capability, because that's weird.
I suppose it's a licensing thing.
I don't know about that. It could be, though. Regardless, most of your computers are probably never going to have an optical drive. A lot of laptops don't. So you're going to, if you get an external one or whatever, it's going to come with a driver. And there's probably lots of free ones.
Talking about weird, is the No Internet Explorer took the browser out.
I think it's about time, really.
Well, Internet Explorer will still be there. You'll have the new one also. And they just changed the name. I think it's called Edge now. So you're going to have both for a while, especially, and there's really two versions of Windows 10 we should mention. There's the consumer version, and then there's the business version, just like we have today. So there are slight differences, but IE will still be there for compatibility for a while, at least through Windows 10. But, yes, you should probably get used to the new Edge. There's going to be quite a few differences in that, because that is the future.
Things got to move forward.
Yep.
Things got to move forward.
Jeff, do you know, is there an administrative way to keep that Windows 10 icon from popping up in your status bar?
No, and here's an important part. On the consumer version of Windows 10, you no longer have the option to opt out of patches. The patches will be installed automatically, and there's no way for you to turn those off.
That's a good idea.
In the consumer version.
I love that, yeah.
Okay, so the
pro version, so you can delay it.
Right, that icon cannot be popped up as if you are a business and you run something called a WSUS server to do internal patching. In those cases, you could turn the icon on and off, and by default, it's off. So most business PCs won't see this icon if your business runs a WSUS server. But if you're talking directly to Microsoft, from now on, you're not going to get the choice of patches and stuff anymore, especially once you upgrade. Businesses will be able to control that through their WSUS server. We'll be able to control Windows 10 patches through that, too. So a business will be able to control it, but consumers will not be able to in the future.
Probably not without some assistance or third-party software, likely.
Right.
I'm sure somebody will make that a possibility.
Linda has a comment for us. She says, the first thing is a follow-up to the Outlook.com question we talked about. Does the same thing apply to the Outlook.com app that I downloaded on my phone? She says, because it doesn't sync and with my desktop either, so she has to delete all her messages twice.
Once the Office 365 and you move over to that will be kind of your Exchange server. So As long as you sync everything to that, and it will keep the kind of the master copy of everything, though you may have local stuff, that should all be kind of fixed. And that's part of the reason why they're getting away from Outlook.com and moving into their unified server strategy with Office 365, is to fix a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so what happens there is if you've got an Outlook.com actual application on your phone, it's using the server as its storage medium, right? So it doesn't pull all the email into your phone simply because you have a lack of storage space. Whereas Outlook, on the other hand, is going to actually create either an OST or a PST file to actually store that data locally. And now you've technically got that data stored in two spots. So if you delete it on Outlook.com, the desktop has no knowledge of that, and as well as vice versa. So just right. Once things become unified, once everything gets merged into actually using the Exchange server off of Office 365, things will be much cleaner.
I'm just kind of following up with more questions off of Facebook here. It was a question for you, Amos. You mentioned that you get the PBS programming on your TiVo. And that would be that you have the TiVo Romeo?
I do.
Yeah. So there's an app on that you can go get your PBS programming on, apparently.
No, not the PBS. So I was referring to over the air.
The over the air. Right. Okay, using the Turk, T-E-R-K, omnidirectional flat panel?
Turk is the one that I happen to have, yep. And, okay. You know, I'm not necessarily promoting that one as better than any other, but it happened to be the one that
any
I bought.
Any quality antenna should be able to. And I think it has to be, what, UHF also? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, just make sure you get a good quality one. You should be good to go.
Yeah.
So Linda, again, writes, the second question is, she bought that Turk antenna that you mentioned, the omnidirectional one, and doesn't get the Fox channel. Wondering if there's any suggestions there.
Do we know where Linda's at?
I have no idea.
Well, without any more information, what we can say is it's likely due to her location and the location of the antenna. And the best bet is to get it, you know, move it around, which can be very annoying, I understand. But move it around until you can pick it up as best you can. And the higher, the better. You can also use the website at STPB to find out what direction away from you the Fox tower is broadcasting. So you can, if it's coming from a certain direction, you might be able to angle that antenna so it picks that up a little better. And that's on STP's website, stpb.org/cuttingthecord. Cutting the cord. You can just go there and put your zip code in, and it'll show you kind of where the tower is and allow you to kind of point it in that direction.
Yeah, look for the antenna web link.
Yeah, you can also just Google antenna web.
And I happen to use Tableau, but they're all the same thing.
Right, yeah.
So really it would depend, you know, are you within their antenna's reach? Are you in a ravine of some sort?
Yeah, maybe there's a big tree blocking it or some interference in your house.
I agree, getting that antenna up high or even purchasing an outdoor antenna.
Yeah, which is the best.
The other option is I have not done this myself, but I have heard that the TV stations are very helpful in trying to get this to work for you, obviously because it's in their interest for you to get their programming. But if you call and say, hey, this isn't working, they'll actually, you know, put somebody on it. And I can't say it's at the level of a TV engineer, but maybe I've heard that people have had good luck calling the TV station saying, why can't I get X television station in zip code Y?
Or a lot of local satellite providers also deal with antenna issues. And you know, you can pay somebody like you can any other professional to come out and make it work for you, and they'll do that. And honestly, you know, I think they probably charge 70, 80 bucks an hour. Or maybe, you know, 80 bucks a visit, 100 bucks a visit. It's worth it to at least figure out, you know, what the problem might be. If you're not a great troubleshooter, you don't want to spend a lot of time, 100 bucks, you know, certainly is going to be a lot cheaper than, you know, 1 month of service from most of your major providers. Right. So, you know, it's a good investment to get a professional to do it if you're unable. But, you know, a lot of the troubleshooting tips we told you. Get it up higher. Make
outdoors,
sure get it
the big one.
Get it the pointing the right direction. You can figure it out on your own if you want to.
Yeah, urban areas certainly you can go with an indoor antenna. Even a
although
one.
You know, I mean, I will say, I mean, with that, yeah, if you're in town, you should be good. In town in Sioux Falls, you should be good, unless you've got interference, big trees in your house. There might be interference from something else, something electrical. I know that was a problem for me. I live dead center of town, but there was lots of interference from all around me, so I had to get it up high, and now I get lots of great channels. So
she says she's from Sioux Falls, so it seems to me that Fox one should work, and that there might be just something wrong. So I would I would actually call KTDW and say,
yeah, totally.
They've definitely got somebody assigned to doing reception problems. I know when there are people with public broadcasting in South Dakota SDPB, and they have a problem getting our channel, we have somebody that they can call and very nice, and they talk to them, and they usually resolve things. So yeah, all the stations have that person. Go ahead and get a hold of them, and they'll help you out with that. And they've most likely, if there's a problem, they've heard it before and have good tips for you as well.
Oh, it was just on to the next question from Facebook. Facebook is very busy today.
We're lighting it up. I didn't see it. Go ahead.
Willis asks, he's piggybacking off the Office 365 question. Is there any way I can use Word or Excel without the web connection? I have a tower with no web connection. And the short answer on that is it depends on the type of Office 365 subscription you have. There's different levels. Some have are web-based application only, similar to like Google Apps, and others actually include a full version for you to be able to download onto both your phone, tablet, or desktop computer. So it would be dependent on the subscription you have to Office 365.
But chances are, if you've got a license key and you've downloaded and installed and put that in, you've probably got the version that you can use offline or without a without.
But he's saying he has a tower with no web connection. You would have to get it. You'd have to get that connection to the web in order to get it installed, because even the installer, while you could download it to a small zip drive or something, still pulls that
data
from the web.
Still going to go touch the web,
and still pulls those files down. So I would say it's somehow or another you're going to have to get that machine connected, even if it's just temporarily.
Sure. Well, we do need to take another quick break. When we come back, we've still got a couple of things to talk about today. We haven't really dived deep into that government hack that is on the news right now. And then I want to talk a little bit about keeping you safe while you're using those free Wi-Fi hotspots. It can be not necessarily complicated, but there are some more complicated things that you can do to keep yourself just a little bit safer. And we'll talk about those after this break. And welcome back to the third half of Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've got Amos here and Jeff and Joel ready to take your questions or comments. Facebook.com/Tech Radio is lighting it up today, but you can also tweet us at SDPB and the email address midday, MIDDAY at SDPB.org is the place to go if you want to ask a question or make a comment. June 19th is the next Tech Radio. Noon Central Time here on SDPB Radio. Please join us then. And then if you're really setting your Outlook.com calendar, July 17th will probably be our annual sysadmin day show, I would imagine, because that's our only show in July. So
there you go.
That's got to be the show, and we'll most likely have a guest host that day. So extra reason to tune in. You won't have to listen to me. So I'll be doing some summer traveling in July, and it concerns me whenever I'm in a strange town and I roll up to a coffee shop and I want to connect and check my mail. And obviously I'm a state employee, so I'm in a government system, and I try to stay a little bit more secure than the average person, I guess. I want to have a decent connection, but I'm a little wary of hearing about the people that put up the false Wi-Fi hotspots to sniff traffic. What are those folks called?
Bad people.
Bad guys.
Bad guys.
There's a I suppose there's a million terms for it. It's called a man-in-the-middle attack.
Man-in-the-middle attack. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So there are some lists out there compiled to help you try to stay safe while traveling or using any free Wi-Fi connection from anywhere. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that today because there's some really good tips in that list. And the first of which, and you can do this on your Mac or on your PC, is to turn off file sharing. I assume that's an obvious one, so that you're not sharing files with anybody on that given network. Is that basically what that means?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So if you've got, if you're at home and you've got your laptop and you're sharing files and you've got, maybe you're doing it for simplicity's sake, you've got sharing set to allow everyone to be able to add or remove files from that particular folder. If you are on a network, someone could, in theory, be able to access that. You know, the idea, most of the wireless networks have some segmentation that keep the endpoints from talking to each other. But if, like you're saying, someone puts out a device that is meant for malicious use, then, yeah, absolutely, people would be able to access that stuff.
Some of the other things are a little bit more obvious as well. Patching up, checking your apps, making sure you're all caught up before you go. Enabling two-factor authentication. Now, that's something that I'm often prompted for when using Google-type things, but how common is that? Is that common everywhere else?
I think that's pretty agnostic. I mean, the procedure with which to do that might be different on a Android device or an iOS device or a Mac or a PC, but that authentication where both sides are involved in the encryption, to speak in layman's terms, that's available pretty much on any modern device. So you can definitely do that. Again, that might be kind of complicated, but depending on your device, you can either Google a way to do it or just kind of go into your security and privacy and poke around until you find it. On your Mac, that should be turned on automatically. You would have to have turned it off or had somebody turn it off for that to not be on automatically. And I'm not entirely sure whether it is on iOS devices, but I kind of think it is automatically turned on.
The next one I'm going to need some help on, either from Jeff or from Amos here, because I'm going to be in over my head really quickly. Using a VPN or a virtual private network, I kind of know what that is. But to actually use it is probably a whole other thing. So using a VPN, it's so that you connect basically a secure connection to the place that you're using to do your browsing and your emailing and all those kind of things, right?
Yeah, the purpose of the VPN in this case is to encrypt that traffic to some other more trusted place on the Internet before it gets de-encrypted and then spread out. So that man in the middle, unless he is on your trusted network where you terminate your VPN, and you can actually buy VPN services from many companies and stuff, or use free ones and stuff. There's a whole variety of them out there, all of different trustworthiness, and most businesses have their own VPN. But the nice part about the VPN is it encrypts all that traffic so that man in the middle cannot read that data. And it becomes really important when you realize it, because a lot of people are used to nowadays to HTTPS, the SSL, when they go shopping on the web and stuff. Well, we're finding more and more apps don't automatically encrypt data in transit. So, well, if you go to the web page and I'm not going to name names, and shop, it's all encrypted in the man-in-the-middle cap. But if you use their app on your phone, it's unencrypted, and they see everything, including your credit card that you just sent to them to pay for your purchase. So
that's not good.
Apps are becoming kind of the weak part. There's more pressure on developers.
You should actually go ahead and say what app and what website you're talking about. There's no reason to hold that back. So I assume you're talking about Amazon.
Enough of them and enough in transient moving stuff that I don't want to give out false information. There's a whole list that
all
you
of
do
them.
A little bit of Google search, you can find the current ones that are bad.
Okay.
But the VPN gets around all this stuff because it encrypts every piece of traffic off the device, so you don't have to worry about that anymore.
I'm creating a secure line back somewhere that I trust is basically right. what a VPN is.
And any man in the middle, so to speak, along that line, all he can see is encrypted traffic. He can't see, even if your app is unencrypted, he can't see that unencrypted traffic. So,
sure. The one problem, of course, being if you don't have access to a VPN, then you can't use one. So if you're kind of your standard home user, you probably don't have access to a VPN. So ideally, so basically what we're saying, if you have access to a VPN, you probably already know that, and you should use it. If you don't have access to a VPN, you probably don't have access to a VPN.
And there are free ones out there
sure,
that you can use.
Sure, it's usually something you have to purchase. Yeah. Well, it is always something you have to purchase or get access to somehow.
Sure.
It's a great idea. What I would say about any of this is just don't use Wi-Fi unless you absolutely have to. And when you have to, make sure you know exactly what you're doing. Like, don't say, hey, there's a Wi-Fi signal. I'll just use it because it's open. Don't do that. Absolutely don't do that. All this other stuff that we've said, you don't have to do because you aren't using rando Wi-Fi in the middle of nowhere. You know, talk to the place. If you're at Burger King, go find out what their Wi-Fi network is named, what the password is, and you're probably good to go. This is another suggestion I'll make. If you're traveling around, and I do this if I go to a convention or if I go through an airport, I just turn my Bluetooth and Wi-Fi off. I just turn it off on my device. And I turn it back on when I'm at a place that doesn't have 100,000 people. Because even if you don't connect to something, that's just like leaving a door open, a crack. If somebody really wanted to get into your stuff, they could. Chances are they're not going to, because why are they going to want to get into your stuff? Because they don't want to see, you know, what flowers you planted or whatever it is that you're doing on your phone. But it's just a good thing. It's easy to do on your phone. Just turn off Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, unless you're going to use it, and then make sure you know what Wi-Fi you're going to hook up to by name, and you're going to be pretty good. That's what I would say.
Okay, my kind of stupid, obvious question is, can I VPN to my home connection?
You have to have software or a VPN set up, but yes, of course.
But I could do, I'm assuming I'd have to do some ports or something on my home router, or I'm assuming it's more complicated than that, but can I? Do that.
It depends, but yes, and in fact, it gets into another subject. A lot of people actually use VPNs in different countries to get Netflix because they can hide themselves. The VPN also hides who you are somewhat,
Which is a whole entire other thing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But a lot of home users can use VPNs, and in fact, you can buy home routers with VPN.
We've talked a lot about VPNs. It does not necessarily protect you from somebody trying to hack into your phone, depending, or your computer where you are.
No,
it does help,
it
doesn't necessarily. It's not a solution. It's like, I got a VPN, I got nothing to worry about. Not true.
But it's going to help me. It's going to help me not have to worry about that man in the middle kind of a thing on a dirty network somewhere
in the middle
of wherever.
It could. It's just another level of protection. It's like wearing a raincoat when it's raining. Your shirt's probably not going to get wet, but it still could get wet.
All right. Let's talk about something more fun then.
Raincoats.
Apple's 2015 developer conference is coming up. What are we going to expect with that?
Well, the rumor has it not so much a rumor. They're going to talk streaming services. They, of course, bought Beats, which has its own streaming service. So they'll probably roll that all together and relaunch their Apple Radio, which isn't exactly a streaming service. So there's supposed to be a big streaming service announcement. Rumor has it there's also going to be some video or TV streaming components there, so that should be a big deal. In similar to the Dish Network Sling TV model or HBO Now, that type of thing. So we'll see how that shakes out. That'll be very interesting. Just another player in the market, another reason to get rid of your cable and or satellite connection.
Is Now live for everybody now? Or is that
HBO
still
now?
Apple?
It's still Apple only right now.
Okay. When does that happen?
I think it's another month.
Okay.
And, you know, I think they're going to be very, you know, part of the reason it was Apple only is because Apple probably greased the wheels in order for them to develop the app and have the bandwidth in order to handle that. The other reason is it's very popular. HBO Now is very popular, and they probably didn't want to run into a situation where they could not serve all the people that are paying them $15 a month for that service. So they're probably going to roll it out slowly. It might come to another platform, maybe the Amazon thing, or maybe it'll go to Google Play. It'll probably roll out slowly rather than all at once, because not because they don't want to make money, but because they don't want to, you know, make people angry, which is probably pretty smart. The other thing that's a little unclear is whether Apple's going to announce any new hardware, if there's going to be a new Apple TV, if they're going to update any other things. But the developer conference is always very interesting, and the next time we're on, I'll tell you all about it. But there should be plenty of interesting and great Apple news next week.
Isn't there an iOS update?
There is every year, so I imagine they'll announce it. It'll probably roll out in the fall. That's typically what happens.
Have they been selling any watches at all?
They sell every one that they can make like 2 months in advance. They cannot keep up with the demand.
I saw something in the news. It was like, this is the most popular by sales and speed and whatever measure. You know, it beats the iPad.
It's one of the biggest launches they've ever had, and that's something that we will hear. See, Apple doesn't make their numbers known. They don't release that every day because they don't need to, but they will tell us on Monday and throughout the week about how their sales are going. But all the experts say that it's been a really, really good rollout for them.
I haven't seen one in the wild yet.
You haven't? I had mine.
Well, I saw you had one.
Yeah, my wife's, and now she wears it every day. Mine's supposed to be here like next week.
When I come in here, I expect to see like an entire Apple store wrapped around you.
Right. There's that.
But yeah, maybe, I don't know if I'm just...
I think part of it is that there's no Apple store here, so you can't go look at one.
They're not at Best Buy?
They are not, and I don't anticipate they will be for a while.
Okay.
Because there's just too many reasons for them not. You got to try them on, get the right size. There's, you know, dozens of different configurations and models. Mm-hmm. So, but the other reason is they're super constrained. If you order one right now, you will not see it till the end of July, maybe August.
Really?
So that's one of the other reasons you don't see it. They just, a lot of people, when you can go into a store and buy it, you're going to see a lot more, I think. But there's, I mean, been a very big launch for them worldwide.
Yeah, I knew it was going to probably be big. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was probably going to be that big because when I start talking about wearables to people, you know, the light switch goes off and it doesn't seem to be anybody. I don't sense excitement.
Ever since my wife took it back permanently, I miss it so much because I have to take my phone out of my pocket all the time. Whereas I didn't used to do that. I can't wait for my new one to come.
You know, as long as we're talking Apple stuff, did you have anybody send you that text message that shuts your phone off?
No, the one using Arabic characters.
I guess I was wondering, is there something we should tell people about how to fix that? Because I've heard...
I don't know. Apple's got a fix in the way. We should tell people what it is.
Yeah, back it up.
There's this weird vulnerability that doesn't involve any technical know-how. Is just a string of characters written in a specific
string
Arabic written language,
no.
And it was a specific string of characters that just would shut your phone down, your iOS, your iPhone down, and just no explanation of how, but it was just sent in a text, would shut your phone down, super weird, and Apple has a fix in the works. If it's not already out yet, I don't think it is. It will be out soon. So just keep your phone up to date. I don't know that there's a fix.
Well, I heard the fix that was, and I don't have an iOS phone to know if this is true or not, was that because when you reboot your phone, if that text is still there, it still tries to process it and shut it down.
Oh, sure,
again, if you try to open that
send
another text
right,
back
yeah,
out.
That was the fix. Yeah, that came out right away. Yeah, the fix is if you get that text and it shuts your phone down, don't worry, it's not the end of the world. What you need to do is like tell your buddy, hey, send me a different text.
Yeah.
And then the next text will be, you know, like... Because the deal is you'll see another text. So, yes, there is a fix. Google it. You'll figure it out.
Don't think they'd be my buddy anymore after that.
Oh, at work, people were sending each other text messages during meetings just to shut their phones down.
You got to be kidding me.
I love it.
That's so malicious.
Geeks. No, it doesn't kill your phone or anything. It just makes it inconvenient.
All right. Well, the music tells us we are at the end of another scintillating tech radio. here on Dakota Midday. I want to thank my panelists today, Jeff and Joel and Amos for being here. And we will be back on June 19th. That's our next Tech Radio. We'll have a special guest talking about SQL. 605 SQL in South Dakota coming up in July. And we'll be excited to hear about that and take your questions and comments then. Have a great weekend, everybody.